That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
WQAD Podcast Network.
The Cities with Jim Mertens, a production of WQPT, PBS for the Quad Cities region, a podcast in partnership with WQAD. What's going on in the Quad Cities? Activities, events, fun, politics, sports, local issues and opinions. And now, your host, Jim Mertens.
I'm Jim Mertens, and this is the Cities Podcast, the bombshell from the U.S. Supreme Court. Never has a draft decision been leaked out of the court, the pillar of justice, the cornerstone of America's judicial system. But yes, it indeed happened. And at the heart of it, the most polarizing case in American politics, abortion. There's no doubt the Supreme Court will recover, but how? And how could this have happened in the first place? We talked with Western Illinois University Supreme Court and constitutional law professor, Dr. Richard Hardy. Dr. Hardy, thanks for joining us. Let's start with this leak. How profound is that? How much does that shake and rattle the nation's high court?
Well, it certainly has rocked it, unlike I've ever seen before. Ever since the Supreme Court began, they've been shrouded in secrecy in terms of their decision making. I've been to the Supreme Court. I've been in that room where the conference room off of the Chief Justice's office where they make those decisions. Not when they were making a decision. Rarely does anybody get in there, but when they're in session, nobody gets in. And when they have their own telephone system, they have their own system of communication, and they do not allow anybody to leak that. And that's a norm that has never been violated up until now. And so given the seriousness and the contentiousness of this decision on abortion, it has magnified it many times over, and they have to get to the bottom of it, obviously, but it is something that has absolutely broken all norms of conduct for the Supreme Court.
Does this say something about the Roberts Supreme Court? I mean, that has he lost control of his own Supreme Court?
Well, he may feel that way. Now, we have to find out where this came from. Now, if it came from a justice, this is grounds for impeachment, I would think. I doubt that it would. All indications it might be a clerk. Every justice has four law clerks. They're selected from recent graduates of the top law schools in the United States. They're the cream of the crop. In fact, many of the people on the Supreme Court were law clerks, including John Roberts, including Breyer, Gorsuch, Kavanaugh. These people have been, it's a real trust. So if someone there leaked it, it is going to be very serious for them. I don't know what their future holds. You know, it kind of reminds me in some respects of when the Pentagon Papers papers were leaked to the New York Times and Washington Post, and some people felt as though the person is a real hero for exposing what went on there in four administrations, and others thought the person was a traitor. I think what we're seeing here is, I think you mentioned in your intro, that some are praising this person as a profile in courage, while others are saying you've just violated the most important trust that anybody could have in our system, is to violate the trust of the Supreme Court. So I guess we'll find out what happened and we'll go from there, but it is extremely serious.
Explain to me the protocol that you have when it comes to a decision and an opinion being drafted. The opinion is drafted by, of course, there's a majority and a minority opinion. Right. Who picked Samuel Alito, and why do you think he was picked for this?
Well, the way that the court works is, first of all, you have to have a rule of four to get the case to the Supreme Court. And obviously, there were at least four members that wanted to get this. And then once they decide in the conference room, they go around the table and they give their views and they take a vote. If the Chief Justice is in the majority, then the Chief Justice will write the case, or he can assign it to somebody else to that is closest to his opinion. If the Chief Justice is not in the majority, then it goes to the most senior member, and that person can decide who writes the opinion. I'm kind of leaning to the fact that that John Roberts was not in the majority, was not writing the opinion, that he was probably on the dissent. Now, for it to be law, five members have to agree to the exact same decision to be law. Otherwise, it's a ruling, and you need five, four in order to make that ruling. When they make that decision, they always send it around for comment. It's what they do out of courtesy, and everybody gets to look at it and offer suggestions. People can write dissents. There could be dissenting opinion, or it could, you know, you've got all different combinations here. But when it's sent out, everybody makes a comment if they want to, and then it goes back before the final draft is presented to the court. At any time during that time, it can change. So what we have seen, if this was written by Alito, that was prematurely let out, and this is not necessarily the final result, but it sure gives an indication what the court's going to do in terms of Roe versus Wade in this case of Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Center.
Well, Dobbs versus Jackson is what this case is about, having a test of the Mississippi law that had the 15-week viability, I guess, what would you say, the 15-week line as far as an abortion is concerned.
Yeah. Well, Roe versus Wade picked viability as the beginning of the seventh month, and which you would be capable of living outside the womb. But in the Jackson case, they're talking about detecting a heartbeat that the fetus then, the law in Mississippi would call it a human being. And so therefore, that's the new demarcation that it would be.
But are you surprised that Alito went as far as he did? I mean, he didn't just limit it, at least according to this draft, he didn't just limit it to the Dobbs case, which would be a little more specific. He went straight after Casey, Planned Parenthood versus Casey, as well as Roe v. Wade.
Well, I have a list that I've given my students of the cases that have taken place in the Supreme Court, been rendered by the Supreme Court since Roe versus Wade. And it's an extensive list. And every time that would come before the court, it would be nibbling away at asking questions about what about father's rights? What about the parents' rights if you got a 13-year-old becomes pregnant? There are an infinite number of cases before the court. Casey, of course, is probably the most far-reaching since that time, saying that really you can't do anything to encumber a woman's right to have this abortion. But here's the problem from the very beginning, if I may. In order to be a right, a fundamental right, it has to be found in the Constitution. For example, the First Amendment says there should be no abridgment of freedom of speech or press. The Fifth Amendment, no self-incrimination or double jeopardy. But the problem with some rights that we perceive in the public as a right, for example, education. A lot of people say education is a fundamental right. Well, it's not, because the word education is not found in the Constitution. It's therefore left up to the states under the Tenth Amendment. Those powers not given to the national government or prohibited states are reserved to the respective to the states or to the people. That includes homeschooling. The problem with privacy rights, which Roe versus Wade is based upon, is that there is no provision of privacy in the Constitution. So it's based on inference. And if we went back to what Justice Blackmun said in Roe versus Wade, he says, well, there are zones of privacy. And for example, I may show this, if this is with the Constitution here, and you can't find it in this Constitution, but you find the First Amendment says, freedom of expression and freedom of religion. And the Third Amendment, no quartering of soldiers. And the Fourth Amendment, says your right to your be secure in your purchase house papers against unreasonable search and seizure shall not be violated. And you got the Fifth Amendment, no freedom from self-incrimination, and the Ninth Amendment, whatever that entails, cast a shadow. And in the shadow I got on my desk here is the zone of privacy. And that's big enough to include the right to have an abortion. Well, it's based on an inference upon an inference. And even Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who is the most staunch supporter of abortion rights, has said on occasion that she's worried about the way it was built, constructed, and it could very well collapse down the road. We have a situation where we've got now with Trump's appointees, with Gorsuch and Kavanaugh and Amy Coney Barrett, we have a majority of people who now believe in that this abortion rights is not on firm ground. And this is the bone of contention. And a lot of people think it's been there for so long, we're just going to continue with this right. What this case appears to do is then send it back to the states. It does not necessarily make abortion illegal, but it would throw it back to the states, where the fights would be then in the state legislatures in Springfield and Des Moines and Jefferson City, et cetera. That's the importance of this case. And it's as much a federalism issue as it is a fundamental right to freedom and privacy.
You know so well the Supreme Court, the buck stops there, whether it's issues of morality or politics or anything else. And so people say, oh, gee, the Supreme Court shouldn't be politicized, but it can't avoid it, can it?
From the very beginning, the U.S. Supreme Court has been both a political body and a judicial body. It's a political body in the fact that the president nominates him. The advice and consent of the Senate for the appointment is very political. It has been growing at accelerated rate, being political, especially since the Bork hearing, in which Joe Biden was the presiding committee person on the Senate Judiciary Committee. It has increased to the point at which it's so cantankerous that I don't know why anybody want to serve. You don't have to look up your family history. Your opponents will do that for you. It is becoming a scathing, demeaning process in some respects to whoever goes up. So it stops there. Well, there is something that's above that. You could pass a constitutional amendment. In fact, we've had four Supreme Court decisions that have been overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court by a U.S. constitutional amendment. It happened with the 14th Amendment, an overturning Dred Scott. It happened with the income tax, overcoming a case rendered in 1895. We could go down the line, but you can overturn that. And of course, there's one more thing. It's been said that Supreme Courts follow election returns. And that is oftentimes when the most contentious cases come out. It's usually at a time of great social upheaval when our nation is changing and they feel like the Supreme Court might be out of sync with what the American public want. And when that occurs, eventually there's enough pressure that they've kind of changed. Roosevelt tried to change the court in 1935. He didn't succeed. He was upset because four of his top programs for the New Deal were declared unconstitutional by the Hughes Court. And eventually, those people retired from the court. He got new people on the court, and two or three people changed their minds. And eventually, Roosevelt got exactly what he wanted at the very end. So it's an ebb and flow. It's not static by any stretch of imagination. People change, personnel change, and opinions change.
Western Illinois University political science professor, Dr. Richard Hardy.
Thanks for listening to The Cities with Jim Mertens. And watch The Cities Thursday nights at 7, Sunday afternoon at 4, and Monday night at 6 on WQPT PBS for the Quad Cities region.
WQAD Podcast Network.
How powerful is Cox Internet? Powerful enough to let your band members in Vegas, Phoenix, and Rhode Island jam like you're all in the same garage. Get gig speeds powered by fiber from Cox. It's internet built for tomorrow, today. Cox, always building better. Download speeds up to 1 gigabit per second. Cox Internet is connected to the premises via coaxial connection. Speeds vary and are not guaranteed. Cox terms and other restrictions may apply.